What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll likely sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times. But this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum, as well as they have mints. It's got caffeine, L-theanine, vitamins B12 and B6. These have been proven to help with energy, focus, memory recall. So, you know, I like to chew it all the time. I chew it while I'm working out, while I'm driving around showing houses. Really, if I just ever need a little pick-me-up, but I don't want to go for another coffee or energy drink, I pick up a piece of NeuroGum and... yeah, and it doesn't make you really jittery, and it kind of helps me focus. So get out there, try some NeuroGum. We have an awesome guest in studio here today. He is he might have the longest intro that I've ever done. He is a father. He is a CEO of Ascent Dealer Services, the president of Alton Family Martial Arts, a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's involved in multiple real estate companies, the CEO of Marburger Coaching and Development, the co-founder of the Dental Protection Group, best-selling author and keynote speaker, the great and powerful Adam Marburger.
Great and powerful. Never heard that before. Hey, happy to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you, bro. So Adam and I are, we train jiu-jitsu together. We've been training together for a number of years. Big part of the team. He's got an affiliate gym in Alton, Illinois that we all train under TAC team together. So, Adam, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself for people that don't know you?
Well, I am a jiu-jitsu junkie, like you just talked about. But yeah, I mean, I've got three beautiful little girls, and I'm a psychopath for business. I just don't sit still. I don't plan to sit still. And it's my life, my friend.
Yeah. So, tell us a little bit, like, how did, coming up, where are you from? Tell us, like, kind of the origin story of Adam Marburger.
Yeah. So I grew up in a little town called Wood River, Illinois, right? Okay. So. About 25 minutes from the city, St. Louis, so right on the other side. I grew up there, graduated from Wood River High School. When I turned 18, I wanted out of Wood River. So my parents had actually divorced. My mom moved to Godfrey, Illinois, which is right up, basically connected to Alton. Mm-hmm. And so she moved out that direction. I decided to move out that direction as well. I went to college at Lewis and Clark, which is in Godfrey. Mm-hmm. And then I never left Alton, Godfrey area. So that's just, it's home to me. I've been there since 18 years old. That's where Ascent Dealer Services is headquartered. That's where Alton Family Martial Arts is headquartered. That's where I would say 60% of all of our real estate holdings are headquartered. Everything's in Alton. So that's home to me now.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet. And you do so much. So I guess let's get into, first, how did you get into jiu-jitsu?
So I started with MMA actually. Well, actually going back, it's kickboxing. I was a junior in high school. My friend Jason took me to a kickboxing gym in O'Fallon. And I thought I was tough. Like, even on the way there, my first time, I thought I knew how to fight.
Of course. We all do, don't we?
I didn't know how to fight. I was strong. I could lift weights, but I didn't know how to throw a proper punch, right? So,
were you an athlete?
I was an athlete. Yeah, basketball, you name it, I did all. I was very athletic. But here's the thing. Growing up, these gyms aren't like what we have today. Like, you spar day one at some of these places, right? Yeah. So I went in there, and I sparred with a guy who was a lot lighter than me, too. He just lit me. But driving home that night, I loved it or something about it. Getting your butt kicked, it was pretty cool. It's therapeutic. Mm-hmm. So I spent about a year kickboxing. I did a couple little fights, did some boxing exhibition. We're talking like 2-minute rounds, big gloves and headgear, right? So I got a sense of being in the ring. And then I got into a little bit of an altercation. So I was 22. So I stopped kickboxing for a couple of years. I was in a place that I probably shouldn't be, is a beautiful place, a late night club. We'll just leave it. It was a late night club in St. Louis where everybody went after the Polaris club. So it was just this one place where everybody goes. Might be on the east side.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be on the east side.
It might be on the east side. I'm just going to throw that out there. Okay. And if my daughters are watching the east side, there's a bunch of shopping malls. Yep. There's an ice skating rink, and that's where everybody went. Yeah. Okay. So there was this lovely lady that I was really good friends with. Well, she had an ex-boyfriend, and this ex-boyfriend sucker punched me. Okay. And I ended up getting knocked out. I woke up to having six people stomping on me. Okay. So whenever I left, I was able to actually leave and actually drove home. I looked in the mirror. I was like, I was beat up pretty bad. And the next day I felt like a victim. I had never felt this way before. And I was so disappointed I was in a position to get in a vulnerable place like that. And then it literally 3 days after the event, I'm driving down Broadway in Alton and an MMA gym just opened up. Pro Gym, which was in Morrow, Illinois, which produced a lot of really good fighters. We'll talk about the old school war room, a lot of Scott Ventimiglia, Brad Jones, the Autry boys, Todd Mert, a lot of high level MMA fighters came out of that gym. Well, Mike moved it to Alton and he kind of changed it. It was more of like a family type of place, not more of a like a fight club. So anyway, I'm driving by Pro Gym. I stopped and I signed up and that's where it all started for me. So I did some no-gi jiu-jitsu. And then I trained for MMA. I did MMA for a little bit. I went over to Finney's in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Finney's Burgers. I was a part of that crew for a really long time.
That's where I started.
Yeah. And awesome gym. Awesome guys back in the day. God, when Adam Sella mm-hmm. was a chubby baby. Okay.
Really?
I'm telling you. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm talking 17-year-old punk kid, which hopefully he hears this.
Yeah. Calling out. I hope so.
He probably kicked my ass, really. Unless there's no striking, I'll do that.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So with that being said, though, back then, and then so. Fell in love with MMA. And then whenever I turned 30 and I had my first daughter, I stopped all the heart sparring. I stopped the MMA gloves and, you know, cause I got knocked out a few times in practice and yeah. I'm starting to think like I'm a businessman. Like I'm not going to make money fighting. I went into jiu-jitsu. That's when I made the decision at age 30 to only do jiu-jitsu. I haven't sparred around kickboxing since I was 30 and I'm 43 now. So 13 years ago I stopped. And so it's strictly jiu-jitsu. That's all I do now.
Yeah. Well, and so then, you know, you kept training at the gym in Alton for a long time.
I trained until he moved. Yeah, he moved out of town. And then that's what I was with Finney. Then I went back, was with the War Room.
Who was the head coach back then at Finney?
No, this is before Ezra's time. Okay. So Jesse was a really good coach. So the fighter training was at 3:30. Okay. And fighter training consisted of, you know, you're getting your rope rounds in, bag work in, shadow boxing, your rounds of sparring, and then we'd go do road work together.
Okay.
And like we run so it was pretty hardcore. Jesse was a hardcore coach, good coach. And then I don't recall the demise. I think it was the drive, really. I was driving an hour one way just to train. And then the War Room started expanding in Wood River, which was across the street from my dealership. So it was just so easy to stay there. And then Derek McGuire, Derek was Kyle's first purple belt ever.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Derek McGuire was the hit squad day one guy with Kyle. Derek talked me into doing a Naga tournament. He's like, dude, just do it. And I didn't even know how to tie my belt. He came over to my house. He told me you'd only
trained no-gi before.
I only did no-gi.
Okay.
And so he's like, you should just do jiu-jitsu, man. He goes, gi jiu-jitsu will help no-gi. He goes, trust me on this. So I built an octagon in my basement, all matted out on the walls. I had a legitimate gym at my house.
Really?
So he would come over and he gave me like four or five lessons on like how to grip, how to break a few grips. And then I did a Naga and I did really well. I entered the blue belt division. I didn't do white belt, went right into blue belt. I won the no gi division, but then I got second in the gi division. I went against one of Alan. I can't think of his last name off the top of my head. Alan, he's a black belt. Forgot his name, but I went against him in the finals and he beat the snot out of me. My only victory on that match was he couldn't tap me, but he was up like 30-0 because I just couldn't figure out. He was gripping my pants. He passed my guard so many times and then I would escape and then he would pass again.
Yeah.
But the point to that is when I left that Naga tournament, it's a 4-letter word I don't often know. But when I left that Naga tournament, I was addicted to jiu-jitsu. I signed up with Kyle Watson. He was my coach that day. And then I connected with Josh and Steve McKinney.
Yeah.
Josh and I trained in the mornings in the jiu-jitsu garage. I don't know if you ever
I've heard about it. Yeah, I've heard the legends.
It's kind of a big deal.
A couple people train there.
Right? Yeah. So like then I sold out. Group. I sold out to Watson, man. Watson promoted me. Every stripe on every promotion came from Kyle. I was day one at Forest Park Avenue when he opened up his gym.
Yeah, so, yep. Dude, I love that, man. That is so cool. And then, you know, here we are, you know, that was 13 years ago that you did that. And when did you open up your gym?
2017 in August is when we opened the doors.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah. And kind of what led to that?
Really, it's Alton is a community that I love more than anything. I'm very involved in my community. And jiu-jitsu, as you know, changes lives, sometimes saves lives. So like, what kind of an impact? And so I grew up in fight clubs. I grew up in places that were dark, intimidating. Most people would be afraid to even walk through the door. So I said, how can we change that? So we called our gym Alt Family.
Yeah.
We want individuals that are insecure, shy, that like maybe victims of being bullied in the past, maybe not the greatest home life, whatever that is. We want those that have insecurities to come to our gym because we have that friendly vibe. Like you walk through that door, your family day one. So that we, that's the energy we wanted to infuse into our community. So that's why I opened up the gym. And, you know, being in Alton, it's like, I love going to Kyle's. Like I go, I see you there on Mondays and Wednesdays when I'm in town. Yep. That's my time. I love going over there to train, but it's impossible for me to go to Kyle's freaking 4 or 5 days a week. Yeah. I'm too big. I can't make it work.
Yeah.
But if I had a gym like 2 minutes from my house, so I trained.
You just
so kind of
made
more.
It. You
I
made it work. Out, you made it out of. Yeah, you made a gym because you couldn't get over to Kyle's.
Honestly, kind of what it was. Me and Court Wall and Court's
yeah,
just
Court's the man, dude. Court. He's a fucking
dude,
animal.
He's a psycho.
I love training with him because like he's you know we're about the same size, but he just destroys me.
Court has. It's like rolling with somebody that has four legs and four arms.
Yeah,
like
dude, he's so like flexible and like.
His style, though, the thing with Court, like, I don't know if you can duplicate his style. Like, he's got the most unique style.
His guillotines are fucking.
He's good at everything.
Yeah.
And the thing is, too, you look at him, like, oh, he's not massively muscular or anything,
right.
But he's strong.
Oh, fuck, yeah. I mean, yeah, because he's fought a lot of MMA. What weight class? 145?
Well, he's been at 135, but he's a 145er.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a 145er.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what I would have to, if I fought MMA, that's probably the weight class I would have to fight at.
Quick story about Court, so. Bert was 17 and I used to be a pro MMA fighter, a pro MMA promoter. So I used to put on these amateur pro cards. I did it for a really long time. Court's 17, but he's knocking out everybody. I mean, he's beating grown men in the gym. And I look down at him. I talk to his mother. I'm like, hey, no, I mean, maybe we say he's 18. I don't know. I got to. I mean, I'm like, he's almost 18, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to get political here, talk about the government in Illinois, but I had connections.
Okay.
The Department of Financial and Professional Regulation. So certain things I could do if without saying too much, follow me here. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Court at age 17, freaking beats a 26-year-old grown man in the first round in like 40 seconds in his first MMA fight. So the Court is so Court has been giving people beat down since he was a little boy. Just let's make no mistake on that.
Yeah, because he's been training. I mean, because how old's Court? He's like my age, right? He's like 30 something.
Court's 28. Maybe. I gotta find it. 28 maybe.
Okay.
He's been training since he's like 3.
Yeah.
Like the dude is and his jujitsu is insane, but his striking is deadly.
Really? Yeah. That's something I've never experienced because I've rolled with him tons of times, but I've never obviously I don't do striking. I mean, I did for like a year when I first came to Kyle's. I did the Muay Thai for a little bit, and then I was just like, I've only got so many hours per week to come into this gym, and it's like I'd rather get really good at one martial art versus
smart.
I was like, I have no like you said, I'm a businessman. I have no intention of getting in a cage and getting my head beat in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'd much rather just compete in jiu-jitsu.
You make more in commission and real estate transactions
than I'll ever make fighting. That's for sure.
Well, Court, Court's my guy. Court is the quarterback at that gym.
Yeah.
He is the head coach at that gym. We have an awesome staff now, by the way. Our coaching, we're pretty stacked. We got a really good coaching staff, but Court is started. He's my day one guy. Without Court, that gym wouldn't be what it is today.
He's a great, great dude.
Yeah.
Now, do you do kids training there as well, or is it?
Oh yeah, we have a youth program, kickboxing program. We have a women's only. Amanda Walker actually does a women's only.
Oh, cool.
Class on Sundays, and yeah, we've got all everything. We have everything at that gym.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah, because Pat's got a 4 and 5 year old. He's wanting to get him on the mats.
Yeah, get him in and start. My oldest one. I think he would enjoy it, but I definitely know my youngest one would love it just based on the way he goes about his life and the way he's constantly wanting to wrestle and fight, do things like that. So I really think he would love that. So
it's good for kids.
Yeah.
So,
right,
I mean, just the discipline that you learn from it, I think not just would translate from jiu-jitsu, but into everyday life.
Well,
and
just think of that. And I know you guys will relate to this. That jiu-jitsu gives all these great benefits, but the indestructible confidence that you get, like it's like a superpower.
Right.
Like
that's what business, he was telling me.
It's in business. You just have this superpower. It's not that you're going around trying to start stuff or you're trying to intimidate people. But when you can walk into a room and feel like, what is anyone going to do to me?
Right.
Like the only thing a customer can say to me is no. Right. They don't want to do it. No.
Right.
So, okay. So I take a no as a yes in disguise. We got to figure out what, you know, right. Wow. So, but that confidence that jiu-jitsu gives you in the world, like I don't even look at my competitor. I don't pay attention.
Oh, I think that's a very good way to put it. I mean, yeah, just gives you a lot of confidence, man. Yeah. You just feel it is like a superpower once you get to that point, you know, like blue belt, purple belt, when you train with someone, you know, a brand new person off the street and they're, you know, you can kind of just do what you want. You know, it's like you can kind of feel that and you're like, wow, it's powerful.
It's very powerful.
You know, and I felt it. I remember kind of the first time I ever felt that probably, you know, toward the end of white belt, I remember like, you know, just going with someone on their first day. And it's just so eye opening because you're like, oh man, that was me, you know, a year and a half ago. Like, holy shit, look what I've done in a year and a half that I'm able to do this to someone who's just walked in off the street.
It's amazing.
It's, you know, even people that are a lot bigger than you too. Like that's also something that's pretty, I mean, it's really like that, the true, like as far as martial arts go, you know, it is like, you know, that true martial art where the small guy can beat the big guy.
And
that's like a, I mean, I'm sure you've been subbed by guys much smaller than you because I know I have.
Yeah.
You know, like
his name's Court.
Yeah. Yeah, we just talked about him. Yeah. It's insane. It's insane. It really is. It's a true superpower. And it's changed my life for the better. It's one of the best decisions I ever made was to walk into Finney's and get my ass beat by Amanda Clifton on my first day.
Oh yeah.
You know?
She's good for that.
Yeah. I always I've told the story on here numerous times.
You've told it numerous times this week.
Yeah, okay. Well, this is our fifth podcast this week.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, I always make the joke that, you know, that first day she just came in and I mean, I wrestled in high school. I'm a tough guy. And you know, she just ragdolled me, you know, subbed me probably three or four times in a round. And I was like, holy shit. Wow.
Yeah.
This really works.
Oh, it sure does. Oh yeah.
Yeah, man. Wow. Yeah. So let's get into some of the business stuff. Let's, you know, tell us about your business. Obviously you've got several of them. So, you know, kind of what got you into what you're doing? Tell us about it.
There's so many things that I do. And really like my fourth child and sometimes my favorite child is Ascent Dealer Services. I mean, that company, we built a very, very large company. And, you know, we founded that company in 2019. And we're one of the largest and most respected finance and insurance providers in the industry. We provide insurance products to car dealers and RV dealers, power sports dealers. We're doing business, hundreds and hundreds of stores. And it's awesome. I mean, it's truly, that company's on a rocket ship. A spinoff of that company is a company that I have a partner with named Max Zanin. It's called the Dental Protection Group. So what we do is we provide insurance products to dental practices.
Okay.
And then obviously we know we talked to the martial arts, but the real estate, you and I, we have that in common. I mean, real estate was the engine that really pulled my train that I wouldn't have been able to walk away from my career in automotive and retail if I didn't have real estate.
So is that where you started? Sorry, I just want to back up a little bit. So did you start, you know, selling cars?
I was in the car business from basically 1999 to 2017.
Okay.
Started cleaning cars to selling cars as a finance manager, as a finance director. And so I walked away 2017 and that's a sidebar conversation here. We'll save that, but it's a very unfulfilled life. And so I just walked away from it. I walked away from a stupid salary, big salary I went from hero to zero overnight. And that's where Ascent Dealer Services was birthed. Mm. And then look at that. So, and then I just, real estate is my long-term play. Like I kind of want to get into the Airbnb space now.
Mm.
I want to kind of look in different markets. I'd like to find some in Nashville, down in Florida. I'm looking in Destin right now. You know, and that's, so real estate is, I love it. And then my project now is my personal development company, which I lead a personal development group called The Growth Zone. We meet every other Monday night at 8 p.m. for 1 hour. And basically what we do is there's a lesson every single week. I have guest speakers. I have celebrity type guest speakers that come on that I'm connected to. We read a book a month as a team. I mean, we're not sitting there reading it together, but we're tasked. Everybody reads or listens to a book, create outlines. We study the outlines together. the amount of impact that's been made in this group, people are scaling and growing and leveling up personally, vocationally, spiritually. I mean, you name it. It's freaking awesome. So that's my baby, is my personal development group that I created in January. So that's
sweet. So that's
some
that's
of the
newer.
Stuff I'm doing. Yeah, that's newer. And we're having some fun with that.
Well, that's awesome. So you said Ascent is your favorite. What drove you towards the finance and insurance? Is it just that background of being a finance manager in
that's
the
it.
Car dealership?
That's it.
And just seeing that gap?
Yeah. So I was a very high powered finance director in St. Louis. So here's what I thought. I'm like, all right, how do I duplicate what I did here at scale? That's what I did. I just duplicated what I did at scale. And basically I worked on branding and marketing myself. And I tell everybody this on social media. What you post today won't pay you today.
No, absolutely not.
It'll pay you tomorrow.
90 tomorrows.
Yeah. Metaphorically speaking. Yeah. So the branding and the relentless posting and sharing content and praising others and sharing other people's stories and celebrating it. Now I've built a large company where my customers come to me. I don't go to them, and they come to me via social media. So I get these leads that come to me. Hey, follow you online. I'd love to have a conversation. When I jump on a plane and I go meet a dealer at their store, I get like hugs. I get hugs from people. They give me tours. It's not me cold calling where I come in and they don't want me there. So it's pretty remarkable what we've done with Ascent doing that referral base.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Social media is so powerful. I mean, you know, we're huge proponents of it. Right. Something that's, I mean, all three of us can speak on that. You know, it's definitely grown us, you know, grown our businesses and grown everything for us. So
yes.
I mean, it's such a powerful tool that, you know, pretty much everybody has to their disposal. I mean, you don't need to go to this level of it. You know, you can do everything on this.
Yeah. You absolutely can. And for those that don't embrace social media, your competitors are going to eat your lunch, period. You're going to be obsolete. Obscurity is real. And if you're not investing in this, you're going to be swept up.
If I may, like, doubling down on your point, though, it is about giving before you receive, which Amen. Is if you are someone who gets discouraged by the investment of anything, it's like, even if you want to go with something as, you know, financial wise, like let's just say a 401k, it's not going to mean anything today. When you're 59 and a half, it means something. That's the starting point. And Andy always taught us, it's not about like today, it's what compounds in 90, 180, 360, and then 1,000 days from now.
Amen.
And if you are intent on receiving all of that, what have you given? You'll be empty pocketed the entire time. So bravo to you for just so eloquently putting that.
Amen.
And so, I mean, everybody's social media strategy is different. What is your area of focus when you're dealing with social media marketing and things like that?
So consistency, number one, brand messaging, it has just to be consistent. And you have to share relevant content that's designed to help people advance in their career today. You got to give them something that they can put into practice, right? I do a lot of bragging on other of my teammates. Like, I'll give shout outs to some of my teammates. People are doing extraordinary things. I'm always posting, you know, the wins. Sometimes it's good to be vulnerable too. Mm-hmm. I share the bad. I share my struggle. I share my areas of incompetency at times. And I share those failures. And then I share the lesson learned on those failures. So then when you share that out on social, people are like, holy cow, that dude's real.
Yeah, they relate to it.
Real. Because what people post online, it's freaking a lot of the times BS.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Highlight reel.
You know, one thing that really bothers me, I'm going to bring this up real quick. I remember, I like the fake it till you make it mindset. I get it. Cause guess what? We all by definition were rookie at one point, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan though of like the young 23-year-olds, 24-year-olds that are trying to teach you how to be a millionaire.
Right.
And they have $42 in their bank account.
Right.
And a rented her account.
Dude, it drives me freaking nuts. I got a couple guys this week just blowing me up. They want to help me scale my company. They want to do this. Dude, you're 24.
Yeah, what have you scaled?
What have you scaled and exited? I want to know what company you've exited.
Show me your tax returns and your profit and loss, please.
Please.
It's for something that's not just scaling business, yeah. Facebook Group Incorporated.
Yeah, so going back, there's a reason why I said that. So we all have to have that fake it till you make it, because we all start at ground zero.
Oh, I mean, I was there 5 years ago when I got into the real estate business.
That's for where sure. You share positive post. Positive mindset. Happy Friday. It's a great day to go out and get what's rightfully ours. Let's run today, folks. Hey, you know what? Posting, hey, I genuinely love my connections here on social. Thanks for inspiring me. Things just positive. Spit, because then what happens? You develop a little mini following, and then people are like, I kind of like this guy. Right, I like this girl. I'm going to freaking follow him. Then now we introduce a product or service, Now you have an audience, you know, and that's what should be done. And so the fake it till you make it is okay. Give with your heart, but don't try to help somebody scale a multi-million dollar company. And
right.
Never done it before.
Right. For sure. Okay, come on. It doesn't make any sense. No. Yeah. I couldn't agree with you.
Look at these LinkedIn profiles, yeah, man. Everybody's just a professional. Yeah. Like,
Everybody's got a mindset coach and has a business coach and all these things.
There's more coaches than there are players.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Like, sure. Really though, it's you can create an LLC for anything these days, and like someone could just create a consulting and coaching services plan. But like, this is why you ask them the hard questions. Like, can I see like the legitimate paper on your business? Cause like, if you don't have anything, guys, like, doesn't matter how you market yourself on social media, the word of mouth around you will be that you are a fraud.
Mm. Yes.
All right. Yeah. I just had to say that with some emphasis. Thank you.
Now, is there a specific platform that you use more than others?
There's two platforms that I feel personally that I kind of dominate, and LinkedIn is one of those, and Facebook is the other. I suck at Instagram.
Okay.
Like, I always tell people, because I don't check my Instagram messages. Like, I'll get, like, a lot of people will send me these reels and all this stuff, and I'll say, hey, sorry, I don't really check these. Mm-hmm. I will post on Instagram on occasion because it connects to Facebook, but I don't go through, I don't really know how to use Instagram. TikTok. I think I'm missing the boat there.
You are.
I think I'm missing the boat. I don't really know how to use it.
I don't either.
I had an ex-assistant that pretty much that's all she did. I haven't posted it since she left the company. But I think this summer, my 14-year-old Anna, we're going to do an internship at the agency, and I think I'm going to put her on the TikTok. And so maybe we grow that. But Facebook, Instagram, Facebook and LinkedIn are the monsters for me.
Oh, yeah.
And LinkedIn is one that I need to do a better job with. I don't hardly ever do anything on LinkedIn.
Professionals, let me tell you. Want to know who's on LinkedIn?
Professionals.
Professionals that have money, make money, that have companies. Yeah, they're all on LinkedIn. They're all on LinkedIn. And here's the magic on LinkedIn is you can't spam fest these guys. The worst thing you can do, and I learned this the hard way, is you link up all these customers, these potential clients. And then you're immediately spamming them. Hey, Adam Arbiter, I own this company. I have this, this, and this.
Oh, God.
You're spewing all this information. They don't care. Like the right acumen, and I don't want to give this too much of this away because I don't want my clients to be like, oh, I see what you did, but is connect, share positive information, engage their content, pay attention who engages with your content. Here's the magic. You got to have either you do it or hire somebody to do this. So a staff member has to pay attention to the engagement you're receiving. And you have to make sure you reciprocate engagement. And after you reciprocate engagement, you can then throw a little something in the inbox. Hey, listen, I've been following you now for 3 months, man. I just want you to know I really love your stuff. If there's ever anything I could do to help serve, you know, I'm an F&I loser. I'm an F&I nerd. That's all I know. If I could help you in any capacity, I'm here for you. I just want to let you know that.
Right.
That's not spammy. And I'm not trying to sell, really. I'm just letting you know that I appreciate following.
See, honestly, that's kind of why I've shied away from LinkedIn, because like I could pull up my LinkedIn right now. I think I probably have like 300 messages in there that's all just spam shit from like recruiters and insurance agents and like just
so
dumb.
Pay no attention to that.
No,
I my assistant on Mondays and Fridays, she'll go in on LinkedIn and she checks my messages for me. Any message that has any validity, she sends me an email with the people that I need to go respond to, and I'll go respond to that. That's key, because you're going to get hundreds of people. It's spam.
Got to filter it.
But if you pay for the premium, you start the algorithm will start working. When you're look for people that you want to connect with, you'll find more like-minded people that you connect with, and only connect with those type of people. I don't respond to that crap, by the way.
Yeah.
Just because
I don't either.
A good friend of mine taught me this. My friend Glenn Lundy, he's a superstar is what he is. He taught me this like a year ago. Just because somebody sent you a direct message, just because somebody called you, emailed me, or texted you, or sent you a message on social media does not demand an immediate response. Just because they made that decision, not you.
Right.
So you can make the decision to not respond, and that's okay too, or respond on your own terms. And because I used to be a psycho for, oh, notifications. Oh my God, I got a text message. Oh shit. I got a direct message on Facebook. I got to respond. No, I don't. I don't do it anymore. There's times now where I have 70 unread messages and I don't have anxiety anymore because they decided to message me. I didn't decide to message them. I understand when a dealer client, like when a client calls or messages right. me, I'm calling them back immediately. Mm-hmm. If my daughter's family, Sylvia, somebody like super inner circle that's super critical, they're getting a call back
right.
like instantly. But if it's somebody that they're just trying to reach out to me for something because they need something, no, I don't necessarily have to immediately return.
Your time is more valuable than that.
And it just clicked like a year ago. Like I'm freaking still trying to figure this stuff out in life.
Yeah.
Like I'm a work in progress still, but about a year now, I've been really not rushing to clear notifications, return everybody's message. I'm just, it creates anxiety.
Oh, it does. Yeah. It really does. You know, sometimes you open up that app. Oh my God, I got all these things. I got all these, you know, I got to respond to these comments. I got all these DMs. I got all these things.
First hour of the day, never check. First hour of the day, you don't check that. You don't respond to anybody the first hour of the day. I always tell everybody that.
Good. That's a good motto. Yep. Or a good.
That first hour is yours.
For sure.
Yeah.
No, it's that's
that morning routine.
That morning routine, get the reading, the meditation, yeah. all the stuff.
Yep.
Now you strike me as someone with a morning routine while we're on that subject.
Mm. I'm boring, dude. My life's over. I've got really, I'm so boring.
And yeah, the boring works.
It's the same thing. It's the same type of music. It's the Bible app. It's my meditation. It's my writing in my, it's the same thing every single day. I do the same thing every day.
It's consistency, though. That's
you got to create a habit.
Yeah,
got to create a habit.
Yeah,
you know, and it works. Process, structure, organization, discipline. You know, you cannot run at a high level if you don't have it. Some people are blessed that they can just fly by the seat of their pants, and everything they touch turns to gold. But that is such a rare anomaly.
Oh, yeah, that's, I mean, like it's Alex Hormozi's always talking about it. How he like there's like not having a morning routine, or like you can wake up or sleep in or do whatever you want and still be successful, which I think. Could be true to some extent, but I think ultimately he still has some sort of routine that he's sticking to that works for him.
He begins every workout with calves.
Right. I think, like I said, I think he just, his routine is different than how everybody else does it. For most people, morning routines are great. And it's a great way to get your way started. For me, it's a little bit different. I have a nighttime routine that gets me set up for the next day. So I take 2 hours to myself at the end of every day, decompress, look kind of, focus on what I need to do, gets where I get my meditation, my reading and all that done. And then planning my day that night for the next day. So that way when I wake up, quick look at it. All right, we're moving. Let's go.
Yeah, I like you. So I think that the day starts the night before. You have to have that recap. Yeah. At the end of the day. I do the same thing.
I got to look at my schedule.
You got to dial that in. But here, I read a book and then I reread it. It's called The 5 a.m. Club by Robin Sharma.
Okay.
Book will change your life. Wonderful storytelling. So it's not boring, but it's based around structure, organization, discipline, routine. And there's this 20-20-20 principle where you wake up in the morning, you got 20 minutes of just meditation. You got 20 minutes of exercise. You got 20 minutes of personal development where you're learning something. So it's 20-20-20. You start every single day like that, and you do that every single day, you just completely evolve. And here's what I've learned about the 5 a.m. Club. Everybody talks about, so we all have 24 hours in a day, right? So some people aren't meant to get up at 4. Some people aren't meant to get up at 5. Some people's brains start spiking at 11 p.m. regardless. So I tell people, I do like getting up early. I'm just hardwired for that. Mm-hmm. But that might not be what's best for you or them or her or him, because we have 24 hours in the day. As long as we maximize every minute of that day in our own routine, then that's really what matters. So right. I try not to preach too much to people. Got to be up at 5 a.m. or you got to be up at 6 a.m. That may not be what's best for you. Mm-hmm. But having a structured routine and maximizing and batching your work and having a freaking, you know, a dialed in schedule is super critical, you know?
Yeah, totally. And that book, The 5 a.m. Club, does it talk about like creating a routine?
Oh, absolutely. So much wisdom. And I recommend listening to the audio version.
Okay.
Because the narration and the storyline is just absolutely amazing. Reading the book, I read the book, and it's one of those books. It's a long one. It's hard to follow. It really is. But listening to it, it's freaking awesome.
I'm a big audio consumer.
The audio is awesome. The audio is awesome.
And like you said, with your coaching group, we've done something very similar on this podcast. Is every month we've read a book together. Him and I read a book together. We encourage our listeners to read it along.
We actually sit down together and hold hands.
Yeah. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Read to each other.
Yeah, but we
don't make eye contact though, right?
Every once in a while.
Otherwise, it's awkward if you don't. But yeah, we read a book together, and then at the end of the month, we do a podcast recapping the book. Like we just did one. Was that yesterday or 2 days ago?
Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday. We just recapped this week or this month. We did Winning by Tim Grover.
Okay,
that was an awesome book. I don't know if you've
read
Tim
Grover. I have not read that book, but I love Tim
really
Grover.
Good.
Oh yeah,
it was really good. Yeah, so we just finished that one. So
we're trying to figure out what we're going to read for June.
Here's the thing. It drives me freaking nuts. So everybody, you know, everybody wants the solution, the get rich quick, mm-hmm. the freaking magic. The greats before us already gave us the freaking blueprint.
Right.
They're in books.
Right.
Read the book. Okay, but then here's the magic. Read the book and take some freaking action.
Yeah.
Brilliant ideas. They're everywhere. Then people are like, oh, let's go back to eating potato chips on the couch and play Xbox.
Well, right? And it's like, yeah, people see these like get rich quick, these 24-year-olds that, you know, go viral and, you know, get all these followers. And it's like, it seems like it's an attainable thing, but they're just such the minority.
You know,
it's the people that go out there and actually put the work in for 5 years and then finally start seeing something happen. Yeah. You know, 5 years, you know, it doesn't, no success happens overnight.
The sexiest word that people like to throw around, that is the most brutal, painful, awful existence at times. It is the most dark. It's lonely.
Mm.
Yeah, so lonely. I have so very few people. I have a lot of business colleagues. Like, Zach, if I wanted to pick the phone up and talk real estate with you, I could do that, right? Because you and I can relate and understand that. But like, building a company with your bare hands and working 18-hour days and literally leveraging all your assets, losing all your money and literally showing up to Quick Trip with your debit card and you don't even know if you have enough money in your account to pay for gas. Like, I've been through every season of entrepreneurship. I've been to where we were so broke that I had to leverage everything to make payroll. Until you understand what it's like to move money to make payroll, you don't understand entrepreneurship. And so now looking back at that pain and misery, there were so many dark, dark, dark days. And now it's like, what the hell happened to our company? Because it just morphed into what it is now. But it was those nights and those days of dark. I mean, it's hard work. You know, everybody wants to freaking celebrate you see the success. Everybody, you know, you see the cars or the houses, or we're talking about my pool in the backyard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was shit we were doing 7 years ago to figure that out. You know what I'm saying? It's like it takes so much work to get it, you know, and that people quit because it is 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes 7, 10 years of hard work to even see any fruits of the labor. You know?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You know, sometimes I wish our younger people or younger generations would listen to our podcast because they would be hearing the same message over and over and over again.
Consistency
and patience, that it's just not something that happens overnight and it's a fucking struggle.
Oh yeah. Well, and you know, like you said, just things take time. Like, you know, we were talking about social media earlier, and I think that's a perfect example. Like, this is my fifth year in the real estate industry, and I pretty much kind of got on the social media thing pretty much straight from there. But really the last like 3 years, really the last 2 years, ever since I've been starting with Murph or working with Murph here, my business has just shot up exponentially just because, and I'm starting to get all these random leads from people that I don't know, you know, or people maybe I knew years ago that they follow me on Instagram or follow me on Facebook, and they see that I'm consistently posting all this real estate stuff, all this podcast stuff, all this stuff all the time. And now I'm getting all these leads and all these people that I'm working with, and I'm busier than I've ever been.
You're also crashing in after getting hit by a car in the
scene before. We're figuring out good ways to make the videos a little bit more viral, but it's improving it. But man, it's all about that consistency and keeping up with it.
I think the law of attraction has something to do, though. You know, I think if you manifest it and if you're constantly putting positive stuff out there and I see you on social, so I mean I've complimented you on how many times on your reels. I think they're hilarious, some of them. So you consistently put that stuff out in the universe rewards you for that stuff. And 100%. People don't freaking get that, man. People don't understand. It's that, when you wake up in the morning, you get a decision. The first thing is a decision. When you wake up, the first thing that is a decision, you have a decision to make. The second you wake up, it's, am I in a good mood or bad mood, right? It's a decision. You make the decision on what you are, right? And I just wish people would understand that mindset, positive affirmations, positive self-affirmations, and sharing good stuff with the universe is all you need to be successful. That's really all you need, because the world will conform and give it back to you.
People don't believe it because it sounds woo-woo.
Sounds like, stupid. Like, what is this? What is he smoking? What's he drinking?
Exactly. Well,
you know? Look at the example that you set, though. I mean, just being objective, it's like, you're a good-looking guy. You have a nice watch on. You have a nice suit on. You speak very well. And that's the mold that you're fitting with that first action you take every day. And look, I'm not perfect. Like, my morning routine is a mess. But like, at the end of the day, I get a lot of good things done. And I turn in the person as a result of that. If you want to be a certain person, you have to act as if. So
Amen.
When you lead with positive action, you're going to fit a positive mold. And look, I could speak a lot less critically of things, and including myself. That's a step to take, though. It's the long game. That's a lot of long-term conditioning I'm also fighting against, too. But it's a personal decision. So you have to think about like the example you're carrying around the world, listeners.
Amen to that. Mm-hmm. I love that. That was well stated. Thank you. It's just so many people wake up, though. It's like, you know, like, oh, I have to go to work today. I get to go to work today.
Yeah.
It's just so different.
It's just a tweak of one little word.
Yeah.
You know, there's, and there's certain things, too, like, even with my kids. Like, I'm a dance dad. And I'm freaking over it, by the way, guys. And my firstborn is the most beautiful, talented young lady on the planet. But you know what? I show up for her, right? Yeah, do I want to go watch all these other kids? But I get to go to dance.
Because that's kind of like,
you know,
that's like kind of like going to a wrestling competition, yeah. Right? Like, you could be there. Like, she may not perform until later, but you're sitting there all day.
All day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Boy,
I've got two boys, so.
Yeah, well, I've got one boy, and we're going to find out in about five days.
I hope you get a girl. Some days. I'll tell you why. You know why? Yeah. I wanted a boy, and I got all girls, but as a man, having a little girl, just, man, you want to.
Well, that's what I hope.
Yeah,
the world changed.
Little princess, yeah. You know? Like, yeah.
Yeah, I was hoping that I'd have a girl, but that ship sailed, so.
Yeah.
Getting too old, and. The girl that I'm dating now already has three boys, so there's five between the two of us.
Well, hey, my girlfriend, she has a 13-year-old daughter, so I have Aston will be 6 in July, so I've got 6, Arabelle 12, Avery 13, Annalie 14. I'm the only dude in that house, man.
Oh.
Let me tell you something. It is not all unicorns and rainbows.
Oh, I'm sure. Especially with those ones going through puberty now and getting older.
The middle schoolers are savages. Yeah. I don't know. I bet Arabelle probably listens to this, but irrational is the, if I describe in one word, it's just irrational. Yeah. There's so much irrational thought in everything. It's just that. And the beautiful thing is like, jiu-jitsu, man. my gym's 11 minutes from my house.
Yeah.
That's
I do more
your escape.
I do more jiu-jitsu now than I've ever done.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. I mean, you got it right down the road. You built a gym so you can train down the street from your house. I love that.
Guys, I'm going to go get some milk real quick. I'll be right back.
Dad, you've been to the store 7 times already today.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to go back an 8th time.
Why are you so sweaty?
Why are you so sweaty? That milk isn't that heavy, is it?
I keep smelling like sweat. But yeah, we've got 3, 4, 5, 9, and almost 13. And the young ones are actually like the easiest. They can't really talk back. They're not smart asses yet. But that 9 and 13-year-old, man, they can get an attitude.
The 13, 12, 13, 14, I'm a novice at this, so I'm new to this.
Same here.
It's really, really difficult. It really is. Actually, as a matter of fact, I've already prepped my girls on an Arabelle. We're having a little team meeting this weekend. I sit them down. I've got rules for the pool in the backyard. Yeah. I've got rules.
Summer now. They're out of
school. I got rules, man. And you know what?
They
want Daddy's Amex. You know, they enjoy Daddy's Amex. They want to go to West County Mall. They want this. They want that. But it's things are going to have to start being reciprocated. I'm going to have a little talk with them this weekend. And yeah, they're not going to be too excited about the stuff that I'm going to be sharing with them. So.
Oh, well, that same for me, because I'm big on respect. Like, some of the disrespect that comes, I'm just like, oh my God. I'm jumping in with a 9 and 13-year-old after I've had my 4 and 5-year-old. So I've been able to like get my 4 and 5-year-old disciplined from an early age. And my ex-wife and I are on the same page in how we're raising our kids. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the Bosnian community, but my ex-wife is Bosnian, and they're huge on family. They're huge on respect and discipline. And so her and I were on the get-go from the same page, like from the very beginning. And you can tell, like, our boys are very respectful, very polite. And obviously, you know, they cut loose and get a little wild and crazy, but for the most part, very respectful.
Love it.
And that's fine. Boys are going to be boys, but they're never disrespectful. Now, there's been times where, you know, just the way these kids talk to their mom, the older boys, and I was just like, I was biting my lip because it was new. Like, I don't know where I can step in and what I can and can't say.
Yes.
And finally, her and I had a conversation about it. She goes, you're free. I'm cutting you loose. Whatever shackles you feel like you have on you, go for it. And I was like, oh, fuck yes. And I've had some very stern talking to with them about respect and especially respecting their mother and the way if she asks you to do something, it's yes, ma'am. You fucking listen. And like there was a car ride. I mean, on the car ride up to Iowa, we went to Iowa for Memorial Day weekend. And we had all five boys in the car. Here's the thing. So the 3-year-old slept pretty much the whole way, so he was fine. And then my 4 and 5-year-old, we had a TV in the car, so they're just watching that. It's the 9 and 13-year-old that they're just like fucking with each other, which is normal.
Yeah.
But then they're like, well, we're bored of watching this. Can we listen to music? And we're like, yeah, sure. So like we gave them AirPods so they could listen to the same thing. But then they start singing, like getting really obnoxiously singing. We're like, and she was like, boys, hey, if you're going to do that, no singing. And they were quiet for like 30 seconds, and then they started singing again. And she goes, boys, I asked you, no singing. Like, okay, mom, yeah. And they would be quiet for 30 seconds, and then they would start doing it again. And I was like, fuck this. I turned around. I was like, do you guys have any respect for your mom? Like that, she asked you twice now to stop. And you're just showing blatant disrespect for that, and I don't appreciate that. I was like, I don't want to be disrespected, so I'm asking you nicely now. In a stern way, and one of them was smiling. I go, is this funny? I was like, this isn't funny. Like, we're wanting respect here. So sit down. We asked you to stop singing. Stop singing.
Yeah.
And their eyes got so fucking big.
Like, honestly, I'm kind of scared of you right now.
Yeah. I go, their eyes got so big. And they're like, okay. And didn't hear a peep from them after that.
I'll turn this car around.
That's the thing. It's just like... I don't know. I just had to be a little like, I don't know if it's just if it is something with boys and not listening to their mom or we're trying to take oh, you're just my mom. I think, I don't know. But
having a strong male presence in your life is largely underrated, man. I mean, look, I didn't really have that for the first 10 years of my life. And, you know, it took a little bit longer, but when I started going down a dark path, it's also because the character of a man wasn't one of those things that was instilled in me. My mom did a really good job disciplining me too, but it's you know, if you don't have that person who kind of strikes the fear of God into you a little bit, a lot easier to test your chances. So,
I mean, don't get me wrong. They're great kids, but
no, I get
every,
it.
Like they just, they get, and who knows? Again, I'm not used to a 9 and a 13-year-old. I'm used to a 4 and 5-year-old who's like, okay, dad. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I'm big on yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Whatever your fucking take is on gender, whatever. It's yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. And yeah, I mean, it's just, teach it. And I don't know, like I said, it just, my kids have heard that from a very early age. I mean, I still say it even to the people on my team who are younger than I am. It's yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Yes.
All the way through. And clients, doesn't matter age, whatever. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Yes, sir. No, sir.
I agree with all of that.
So
I agree with all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
know, so, I mean, I was kind of raised in the business world. Everything's right. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Ma'am. Just
polite. Same.
It's, here, let me get the door for you. How you doing, sir? You know, it's respect. I think we were raised differently, though. It's this generation. I'm scared. I really am. I'm nervous for these next couple of decades, to be honest.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially like you were talking about when you walked in, we shook hands, and it was kind of, we were all over the place with it, and we were like, nope, reset. Let's redo this and redo it right. That's the thing is, when you get it, you firm handshake, and you look each other in
eye contact. Mm-hmm. Amen.
Yeah.
You know, it's just people like
that drives me nuts when I meet somebody and I shake their hand. They're not looking at me.
And they can't look at you.
What I do now
is you just,
I go, I'll stalk them till they look at me in the eyes. I'll make it real awkward.
Yeah. And there's a lot of people out there. I mean, a lot of younger that I've noticed, younger folk, younger kids in general, they have a hard time looking you at the eye when you're talking to them.
Yeah. Cause they're glued to TikTok and they're on their phone all day long.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have no social experience, social life. And that's a problem. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's one thing that we've, you know, because I worked in the restaurant industry for, you know, for 10 years. And that was something that was always a huge pet peeve of mine is like noticing, like, you just know, you see different families and you see how they are with kids. And like, you have the, you know, the 10-year-old that can't order for themselves. And mom has to order for him. Like, my kid's 2 years old. You know, he when we go out to eat, he tells the waitress that he wants, you know, chicken fingers and French fries with white dip. He wants ranch, yeah. You know, like that's what he wants. You know, he's 2 years old and he's able to do that.
Yeah.
Like that's, I think there's just like these just social skills that the kids need to learn.
Or they bring the kids a bag of Cheerios and they just let them just throw them friggin' everywhere.
Right. Yeah. That's another thing where they're on the iPad the whole time.
Bro, the PTSD is coming back, man. Stop.
Yeah, Murph worked in the restaurant industry as well. So.
All my life, dude.
Yeah.
But I was raised working under my mom and my mom was like, hey, you're gonna be polite. These are my regulars. And if you do a good job, like, hey, I'll pay you more. If you do a bad job, there's gonna be fucking hell to pay when I get home.
Yep,
there's right. hell to pay a couple times. But I learned how to talk to people.
Amen.
Right?
Yeah.
Good parenting. Well,
that's the thing too, is like kids don't know how to talk to people. No. You mentioned conversation skills and stuff like that. Like you don't see that trying to have a conversation with a younger person. It's so difficult. So difficult. Yes. Like I don't know. It's frustrating, but like you said, yeah, it's kind of scary to think.
Yeah, how are these next couple decades going to look like?
Right, but I'm sure you know people before us were saying the same shit about us.
That's true.
Probably.
But again, the majority of our generation is, let's be real, millennials. You know, we're kind of against the grain when if you think about it, the three of us are against that grain.
Yeah,
the mold of a millennial. We're not that typical mold that you hear about.
They asked how much money in a poll, like how much your salary needed to be a year to live, like as you felt necessary. For all the generations like surrounding millennials, so like Z, A, X, boomers, they all gave like under $100,000. It was like $70,000, $80,000. I can get everything they need. You know what the millennials polled on average said that they needed to live a comfortable lifestyle every year?
Oh, $300,000. No shit.
Half a fucking million.
Really?
It's like, no, guys, you don't. No, you don't. You have to be okay with fucking delaying gratification and having a vision. And dude, I fucked up my life a lot. I'm not great at a lot of things. I'm doing a lot better than I was because I made a decision and I stuck with it. Talking about a lot of things that you've been talking about and YouTube been talking about this whole last time. And just, they're going to sell you a dream, guys. They're going to sell you a lifestyle. And that the price you're going to have to pay is like getting rid of private property, your autonomy, your belief in the vision, the kids you could have, your kids' future. They don't want you to have those things. And their ability to dumb us down and make us complacent with a fucking iPad in our face has been really effective so far. So I get your fear, but
yeah,
it's because of the ideas we talk about in this room is why that shit can't prevail. That's my sales pitch back.
Oh, yeah. Shit. And the part of that's YouTube. Like, yeah. My kids are not allowed on YouTube. Doesn't matter. No YouTube. But we were in Iowa, and YouTube came up on TV, and they were watching, like, all the kids had some like kid stuff on, and then all of a sudden something came up and it was like,
not for kids,
but it was like a kid show. But the things that they were saying, like don't listen, like talking about not listening to your parents and promoting things that I don't agree with, you know? And I'm like, what, wait, how did you guys get to this? So like, it just came on. Like it was the next video in line from what we were watching. I'm like, nope, no more YouTube.
Kids raised off by the algorithm.
Yeah, and it's just, it's
scary, man.
Scary, yeah.
Well, I think it ultimately comes down to us as parents, and, you know, it's. I mean, we're the, you know, the ones raising the new generation, so, I mean, I think it comes down to us.
Don't depend on your school to raise your child.
No.
It's those conversations you have with them at home and
right.
conditioning and disciplining, supporting,
being
loving.
A good example.
Yeah.
Well, but that's the thing, and we've talked about this before. Schools aren't supposed to raise, they're supposed to teach your kids things. The parents are the ones that are supposed to be raising the kids, but I think a lot of parents have kind of gotten that backwards. Like, hey, they're getting raised at school, and that's not the case. That's my job. I don't want random person raising my kids. I'm raising my kids.
Yeah, I think it goes to a step deeper than that too, though. So I'll give you an example. So my amazing daughters go to Alton School District. Right, they were in the private school system for a very long time. My ex-wife and I did not agree 100% on, you know, their schooling. So I didn't want them at public school at all. I didn't. I mean, I don't care who listens to this. If anybody wants to shame me for that, I didn't want them going to that school. Okay. Well, that's where they ended up going. Well, a couple things that I found out is, you know, you got thousands of kids in the school. There's so much poverty. I have never seen in my life when they were down the road at Evangelical, you know, parents truly cared about the education, the well-being of the school, other people, community, all those things. And yeah, we're talking a little bit higher income brackets with families and things like that. So that is facts. Okay. Sure. But when you look at this public school system, is you've got so many kids whose parents can care less if they're there. It's sickening. You know, I was talking to one of my daughter's friends at eighth grade graduation. Parents weren't there. You know, I was actually out of town. I had a trip booked with a client that I just canceled because there's the thought of missing my daughter's eighth grade graduation for work is not in the mentality or the peripheral, right? But the fact is there's so much poverty and there's so many parents that aren't even there. There's so much absentee parenting going on in the community. It's so the problem with that is these children are at a deficit, right? I had parents who cared. I had parents that loved me. I had parents that gave me what I needed, not necessarily what I wanted. But now you've got kids that go without food. You've got kids that are hungry, especially in the summer. Now that school's out, you've got these underprivileged kids that don't freaking eat. So they can't wait to get back into school. And then you got these kids that are acting up in school because of the freaking neglect at home, right? So it's this circle. And that's why parenting is critical. But then again, having podcasts like this and then having like small groups or what can help the younger generation, because there's a lot of younger generation out there that are abused, neglected, and not doing so well. But then they hear something like this, and they can reach out and connect to people like us, and then you can pull them out of that deficit.
Right.
But yeah, it's sad, bro. It's so sad when I see, for me, like my weakness is kids.
Yeah,
it's
same.
It's not the 42-year-old drug addict.
No.
God bless. I hope that person gets help. I don't want anybody to suffer, right? But my weakness is the 9-year-old that doesn't get shit for Christmas, you know? Yeah, that's my weak spot. And that's why, like, for us, like, I don't talk about this. So I got a nonprofit, Riverbend Rescue. And like what we do is we look for these families. Like we look for kids and we look for families that don't have the means. Right. And then we try, and we can only do so much, but like, that's the magic right there, is helping these kids that are underprivileged and put them in the right place so they can succeed in life.
That's awesome.
So
what's that called?
Riverbend Rescue.
Riverbend Rescue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. We've done a lot with the Alton, the Boys and Girls Club Alton. Mm. So Riverbend, you know, consists of, you've got Alton, you've got Godfrey, you've got Wood River, you've got East Alton, you've got Hartford. I don't really consider Edwards, Lubbers, kind of, it's Betterville. Everybody's got money in Edwardsville.
Right.
So, but the community of Alton, what we do is we try to find kids at Christmas time who they just can't afford. I can't stand the idea of a seventh or eighth grader, fifth grader, fourth grader, showing up to school after Christmas break. You got Johnny sitting next to him with new Jordans, and then you got freaking nobody brought me shit.
Yeah.
So Santa doesn't like me.
Yeah, Santa doesn't like me.
Right? That drives me crazy. Man. So like, how do we do that? How do we help? And that's kind of what we do in our community with that stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What's the future hold? What are you wanting to do? I mean, obviously you've got your new group that you start in January. What other ideas or businesses or current businesses you're trying to grow? What are some of those goals?
So I've got a TV show that I'm getting ready to kind of announce to the world.
Awesome.
I've got something very cool that I'm doing on that. I'm going down to Atlanta in a couple of weeks to shoot my first 12 episodes.
Sweet.
So I got that coming out in the mix, but really, this is crazy. Like there's always something like honestly, like goals. I don't know. I just want to keep doing what I'm doing now. Like I don't really. Like I believe freedom's everything to me. Like I don't really work, even though everybody's like, dude, you work tons. I don't work. This is not work. Everything that I do is not work. I love everything that I'm doing. And as long as I can continue that, I'm winning. You know, absolutely. I just want to help people. And I just want to control my time. Business endeavors, brother, there's going to be a lot of them. Yeah. I got another book I'm starting right now. I'm going to write another book. I got lots of things that are happening. It's just nonstop. And I'm not going to sit still. I'm not going to ever be satisfied, by the way. Like that, I'm in a place of, I am happy. I live a very happy life, but I'm not satisfied from a business standpoint. You know, like You get an Emo's pizza. If you don't like Emo's, I think you support terrorism. By the way.
I agree.
So you get it like an Emo's pizza, but like you just eat two little pieces. That's not near enough. You know you're.
Oh no.
That's how I'm with business because like it's never. I don't have any feelings. Like I honestly go to a therapist every and I don't care, dude. I share my whole life with people.
Oh yeah.
I go to a therapist every other week.
Same.
Because I'm a psycho. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like
so did, yeah.
I had one of my competitors asked me a couple weeks ago. He was like, Adam, why are you guys doing so well? What is this? You keep building this thing. It keeps growing. What is your secret sauce? I said, there's two pieces to the sauce. Number one, I have zero sense of accomplishment. I feel nothing. Don't feel anything. I talked to you earlier. Zach, we're getting black belt. I thought I would feel something after getting a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I mean, like I'm proud of it, but I just don't have a sense of accomplishment. I don't feel anything. So in business, regardless of whatever success is, I feel nothing. Okay. And then the second piece to that is I've never met anybody that outworks me. So for my competitors, I'm scary because I don't feel anything. I'm never going to stop and I'm never going to go away. Like I'm like Clay Guida. You can beat me down. I'm coming right back at you, bro. Like, so that's really it. That's the state of mind that I constantly live in. I don't ever have a true feeling of completion or satisfaction with business. And I can't stop working. So those two things right there make me kind of deadly.
I think that's a huge, you know, attribute to a lot of successful people is not feeling, you know, a sense of accomplishment. Yeah. I mean, I feel very similar. Like I it takes a lot for me to like really, I'd never really celebrate my big wins. I mean, it's not something I'm not one to really pat myself on the back too much or, you know, I'm always looking for the next thing. You know, I feel like you're only as good as your last win. So
Amen.
Especially in, you know, business, you're just always looking for that next thing. And, you know, and it's just a never stop. It's a never ending thing. I mean, you're
but
always
fun,
looking
though.
For that. Oh, exactly.
So,
I love it.
It's like freaking, it's a game.
Are you sure you haven't read the book Winning? Because I mean, that's pretty much what everything you just talked about is.
I love Tim Grover and it's going to be on the list.
Yeah, yeah. It's awesome.
You've read Relentless though, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
That's what I say. This feels relentless.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people ask me when somebody asks me to describe myself in one word, that's the word relentless.
Yeah.
Love it.
Cleaner.
Cleaner.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's a good one.
One thing we haven't gotten into yet. How'd you get into real estate investing?
Well, my business partner, Ollie, mentor of mine, back in 2004, he's like, dude, you must show you how to retire. I'm like, show me. Just need $500,000. $500,000. Just need to buy five $100,000 houses, get them paid off. You'll receive that income. You could probably walk away from the car dealership, depending on what price point. And I just started kind of thinking like, okay, show me more. So there was a time, let's go back. There was a special time in real estate. So let's go back 2005, 2006, dude, you could do cash out refis. Like people borrow 140% of the house's value. And I never did any of that. I just sat back and watched, right? And 2008 shows up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lehman's collapse.
Oh, yeah.
Foreclosure city, babe. I bought so many brick ranches with basements, three bedroom, two baths, 30 G's, picking up for 30, 40. I was buying them, boom, boom, boom. And then what I would do is I'd put like 10 grand in it and I'd rent them out for $900. So that's my sweet spot were brick ranches. So I just started buying those. And so Ollie Kitchell, his partners today, we still own a real estate company together. So then he's like, okay, well, that's good. Well, let's start flipping. So then I was like, okay, well, my first flip was a freaking home run. Like I bought a house for 16 grand out of a foreclosure. The house needed like 20 grand worth of work. I sold it for 160.
Oh, shit.
I was a big ball and shot Colin, dude. Like I was living the freaking dream, bro. I went to Buka that night. It was the deal, bro. Like some people might get that reference. I know you guys have it. But that's where, and then we started looking at, okay, well, what does it look like if you do like multifamilies?
Yeah.
And this deal of a lifetime shows up in Warden, Illinois. This woman liquidated all of her real estate. She had this building and she's like, she wanted like 400 grand for it. Well, I was kind of a smart ass and I offered 120 because like it needed some work, but it was just grossly low. She counters at 175.
Mm. How the hell are you going to go down that much?
Dude, listen, because I knew, and I don't want to tell too much. I knew some background. I smelt something. And guess what? In business, the answer is always no. If you don't what?
You don't ask.
So we ended up agreeing, I think like $150 or $160. I mean, the thing appraised for like 400, I got the gate, right? Well, that property's paid off. It's got,
right.
So we've got, it's seven apartments up. So in Warden, Illinois, like there's really not a lot there. They have Wardy Gras every year. Like there's two main bars. We're that big building right in the mix of everything. Okay, so,
shit.
And then there's three businesses in the building. I don't even know what business is there anymore. I've only been to the property twice. And we've owned it for like, I don't know, since 2007-ish, 8-ish.
Oh, wow.
But with that being said, now we've got these businesses. So we have a coin laundry. Like, do we make like $200 a month in quarters? so that deal kind of hit, right?
Laundromats are.
But so that's where it started. But we also lost money too.
Yeah.
I mean, not every deal we won. We've won on almost all of them. It's not all freaking unicorns and rainbows. I lost money. Okay. But that's where it all started, real estate. So I started to you just smell it. It just, when it starts to click. And so that's where I went all in on single family rentals. But now what I'm doing is I'm thinking about exiting. I'm thinking about pumping the brakes. I want to go Airbnb. I want to look in different Nashville. I want to buy a place in Nashville. I want a place in Panama City, Destin 30A area for sure.
Yep.
And then I'm just going to start picking desirable destinations. I'm going to go slow and steady, one at a time. I'm not trying to go crazy. I just want to go one at a time.
Yeah.
That's my plan with real estate.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. And then you got places that you can go visit, and yes, you got a spot. And,
yes.
You know, it's like, that's so cool. Like, I would love to, you know, I've kind of wanting to do something similar, like have a vacation place in Florida. I want to get something in Colorado because I love to go snowboard. Like, I want to have these, you know, that I'm renting out, you know, 98% of the time, but like, you know, maybe twice a year I get to go rent it out. You know, I go there for 2 weeks, you know, or whatever it is. Like that's the goal. That's a big goal of mine for sure.
You're going to make it happen.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Just, you know, time. It'll happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you still have a lot of those single family?
Still have a lot of them. We sold a few, but we still have a lot of them. Yeah.
So is the plan to liquidate those and start going with the Airbnbs?
Not anytime soon, but that eventually will be the plan. It's just, here's the thing. Single family rental is not a sexy market right now. And I'll tell you, let's talk about the bad here. Okay. So I'm losing money on a lot of these deals right now. I'll tell you why. Not all of them are paid off. So when you're doing 3-year arms, what happens when they mature?
Yeah,
prime plus one, right?
Yep.
So I have a lot of the portfolio that, you know, 3% and 4% rates turning into 8.5%. What do you think that does to the mortgage? Oh, in Illinois, I'm not going to say anything negative about Cook County up in Chicago, but all I know is Illinois is not a very great state to live in from a business standpoint. I'm just sharing that out there, not trying to be political, but Cook County controls everything in the state of Illinois. Illinois is miserable. Just say that, okay? So real estate taxes have gone so crazy.
It's insane.
So now you've got these arms that are readjusting at prime plus one, and now you have crazy increases in property taxes. Oh, and guess what else happened to insurance, homeowners insurance, three times.
Fucking,
you guys know better than just as well as I, right? So now I'm losing my freaking rear end on some of these deals,
yeah.
Right? And so it's hard. And can you pass it all to the consumer? No. You can't pass it all, but you can pass some of it over to the consumer. That's what we're slowly, gradually increasing rents.
Yeah, you can't go from a $900 rent to an $1,800 rent overnight. You know,
like it's really hard.
Those people are going to, you know, they're going to go somewhere else.
Yep.
And just to, I know you don't want to get political, but just I'll remark it in terms of leadership. You have a state that's run by J.B. Pritzker and you have a city that's run by Brandon Johnson.
So
look at their priorities and now look how that's affecting people who have investments and businesses in the state of Illinois, especially in the city of Chicago.
J.B. Pritzker, we try not to mention his name.
He must not be named.
Yeah.
So Voldemort. Like, I will tell you this. I used to stay in Hyatts. Mm-hmm. I'm a Marriott guy, by the way. Marriott all the way, all day. Shout out Marriott.
Does not add.
I won't stay in a Hyatt. So when I found out that J.B. Pritzker's family owns Hyatt, I stopped staying in Hyatts. I used to go to Maui every year. I've stayed in the Hyatt Regency on Ka'anapali. I think I've stayed at the property like 9 times.
Okay? Sure.
I will never go back. I will not stay in a Hyatt because of J.B. Pritzker.
Good. You're deciding where your dollars go. You're voting with your dollar.
Well, and we all have that power to vote with our dollar. And, you know, I think if more people realize that, you know, especially, you know, what's happened over the last 4 years, you know, I think things would be different if more people voted with their dollar.
Yeah. And the thing is just completely without like here's how I look at things. Like everything I base decisions off of logic and common sense. I don't worship politicians. I don't follow left, right. I don't watch CNN. I don't watch Fox. I don't like politicians. I don't like career politicians. I just don't. I like people that join for civic duties and civic duties only. when you see a politician going into office that's worth $100,000 and then 6 years later they have a $30 million net worth, what in the world? Like, I can't freaking fathom this, right? And so everything I base my decisions off is just logic, common sense, and that is it. And Illinois, we are broken. I mean, we have a very, very broken state. It is a miserable, miserable, dreadful state. I mean, it's, I don't know if it's worse than, it's not worse than California, but I mean, it's probably a close runner up to California.
I mean, you don't have the weather that California has. That's, I mean, that's the only really redeeming quality is like the physical landscape of the state is so beautiful.
Beautiful.
But as far as how it's ran, it's like, no, this is top down, you know, big government. And you as the taxpayer, you guys got to remember, there is no such thing as a free lunch. All these great idealistic programs that they try to sell you on, that comes out of your pocket via taxes and inflation and a lot of other things that we are not going to get into on this episode. Yeah. Now let's talk about the Trump verdict. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Unless you want to.
Well, Adam, I know you do a lot of public speaking too. How'd you get into that?
Accident. I gave sales meetings for so many years that I just felt comfortable, you know, doing that.
Talking in front of people?
I just, you know what? I think it was like 2019. I got on my first big stage. Like, I don't know. I just love it. Like, I know how, for whatever reason, to like look at people in the audience and connect with everyone. Like, I just feel at home on that stage. I don't, it's freaking weird, man. I like it more than anything. I'd rather do that than anything. I love it. I freaking love it, man. I've had the honor and privilege to like speak like into the Bahamas. I've spoken at many keynotes in Vegas now. Like, just, I've been doing some fun stuff with speaking, man. And it's that book, the writing that book was that platform that kind of lifted it. You know, so
tell us about your book.
So the book I wrote a couple of years ago, I wrote it, actually launched it on my daughter's birthday, April 5th, 2022. And it's called You're the Effing Problem. It's a guide to getting out of your own way. It's a book that I wrote for myself. I wrote it for myself to share with my local community because I was the reason I was not getting the things that I desired. And, you know, I'll quickly tell you the story because this makes up my DNA. Probably should have brought this up 35 minutes ago, just to kind of give you, so you guys can understand who I am. But 2019. So first of all, 2017, I walk away from a $500,000 salary. Okay. $500,000 salary, two cars, insurance. Like, I had the dream job, man. I worked 40 hours a week, lived the dream. Okay. Well, I had a troubled marriage. My kids, my daughter, my firstborn beautiful daughter, Annalie, I came home on a Tuesday night. We had a date to go to the park. I was supposed to get off at 6:00. I didn't get home till 8:30. All right. So my ex-wife, April, says, Adam, Annalie's really upset with you. So I go into the room. She's in our top bunk. I climb into bed with her, and she's sitting there with her arms crossed. And she's like, comparing me to the neighbor's dad. She goes, well, their daddy's always home, this and that. And then me, being a salesperson and defending myself, I'm defending what he does for a living. I said, well, he's a school teacher. He can be here every day. And I'm like, I'm not listening to my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out in the garage. I called one of my best friends, my mentors, Craig. He's my boss. I said, Craig, this is kind of the beginning of the end. So shortly thereafter, I was, you know, I basically was close to retirement. So let's go to February 2019. So 2017, I walked away from the job, like literally like worked on the marriage, tried to save the marriage. And then I went through like depression and like darkness. And then 2019 shows up. In February, my stepdad has a stroke on Friday and dies on Sunday. And he's like freaking best. Like, he's family. Like, he's been my stepdad for 2 decades. What a, just really, really tore the family up. So that's February. April 1st, my best friend and my business partner of Ascent Dealer Services hung himself on April Fool's Day. All right. Right after we launched our company. That crushed my existence is what that did. And then the next month, my grandfather was actually April's grandfather, who was my freaking mentor. I mean, this guy, Albert, was lived a wonderful life, 90 years old, but he lost his battle with cancer that next month. The following month, filed for divorce. So now I move out of this beautiful home that I built, and I'm living with my mom in a spare bedroom. She's grieving the loss. I'm grieving all the loss. I start to party like a psychopath. So I go through a 90-day spiral, running around, doing everything that I shouldn't be doing. And then one day in August, I looked in the mirror. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was just sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically, I cursed at myself. I said, Adam, you're the, and I'll just say, Adam, you're the fucking problem. But I said, it's you. It's not this freaking, these things and the circumstances and the divorce. And it's none of that. It's you. Yeah. So I got on my knees. I begged God for forgiveness. I cut the fat. I audited everybody I was spending my time with. What does this bring? What is, and I just cut all the bad out. And then from that moment forward, dude, I freaking went psycho for work. And so everything I did to better my life, I put it in that book. And so I wrote that book to kind of help other people that were screwed up like me. And I had no idea that like it would, the book would turn into, dude, lots of stuff came from it. Like it didn't even expect, I wrote it with zero expectation of any of that. And it just turned into stuff, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. So that's why 2019, like, dude, I got through that year, dude.
You can get through anything.
Bring it. Yeah. I've seen
rock bottom. Like
I know rock bottom. And I know in that year, I know what it's like to have a lot of money. And I know what it's like to lose every dollar. I know what it's like to freaking lose it all. And that's why we hear these gurus. Like, it's one thing to have it all, lose it all, but did you get it back? Then go share with the world.
Right.
Like there's a big difference. There's those that hit rock bottom, but they get their butt up and they freaking figure out how to 10X what they did before. And that's the mindset I'm living in right now. So yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And how many speaking engagements are you typically doing in a year?
I bet I'm doing a handful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I think future wise, I'm going to do more writing and speaking, but right now my focus is Ascent Dental Protection Group, but in the future I see more keynotes, more writing, stuff like that.
And you said you're working on another book right now.
Yeah.
And when's that supposed to?
So I'm going to be very careful with this. So I'm going to write something specific to the automotive industry. And I'll even tell you right now, I decided on the title already too. I'll go ahead and give it to you. So the title is called Training Camp.
Okay.
Love it. So training camp is my whole mantra when it comes to, I use parallels from martial arts into my training. So yeah. It's training camp, but this book's going to be freaking awesome. And I'm excited.
Dude, that's incredible. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I love the parallel to martial arts. Cause you know, like you mentioned, I don't think we were recording yet, but you know, you said fights aren't won in the cage and they're not, they're won in that training camp, that 12 weeks before getting ready. You know, mm-hmm. that's where the fight's won.
Amen.
Any thing you're going through or going after, it's all in the preparation. Yeah. All in the, yeah.
Oh man, it's crazy what just a little bit of prep can do for, you know, for any sort of presentation, any sort of, and I think Alex Hormozy, you know, talked about him earlier. I think he said like 20 minutes of prep can make you seem like 20 IQ points smarter or something like mm-hmm. that, you know? And it's like, it's so true. You know, if I go into a meeting with a potential seller and I can rattle off all these facts about everything that's sold around in their neighborhood, they're like, shit, this guy knows his stuff. You know, like,
shows professionalism too.
100%.
You should research your client. You should know the client. You should. Yeah.
Yeah. You look them up. You figure out what they like. You know, like you got to be able to tread softly and know the right things to say. You don't want to push any hot buttons.
Oh,
all these
you're
things.
A vegan? I'm a vegan. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah. Yes, those cows, those poor cows. They're so mean.
Yeah. Oh, when was the last time you ate meat?
Last night.
I had a tomahawk.
Yeah, I had a tomahawk.
I just eat a beef jerky stick on the way over here.
It was vegan beef.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, Adam, is there anything else you want to highlight, man?
No, man. I think the only thing I would highlight was jiu-jitsu versus the world. Man. Here, I tell everybody this. If you want to get better at life, I don't care where you are, or I don't care how old you are, too, right? Jiu-jitsu is going to help you. You're going to enhance your life with jiu-jitsu. Jiu-jitsu saves lives, period.
It does, man. It's changed my life exponentially. I know that, you know, Pat's just getting into it. He's loving it. You know,
I love it.
And I do.
And I get my ass kicked every freaking time.
Well, jiu-jitsu really is, but I always sound off with this. And I, you know, here I do some podcasting, and, you know, every single time, you know, you just never know if one, you got some 17-year-old sitting on the couch listening to this, and then maybe you guys said something that kicked him in gear, and then his life's changed forever. I freaking love, that's what I love about doing this stuff, because you just never know who you're going to reach. But I tell everybody the same things. There's no shortage of brilliant ideas. There's just no shortage. And I believe this. I believe that we were hardwired at birth with like gifts. And I think that we waste a lot of time trying to get really good at shit that we're just not meant to be good at. Right. And we're not spending enough time magnifying and marketing and going all in on our skill set. So I challenge individuals, especially the younger generation, identify what is it A, love to do, B, what are you really good at? And we need to find ways to monetize what you're really good at. And then as brilliant ideas come into the freaking head of ours, we have to write them down and take action on it, because Most people will go through life with so many wonderful ideas and they do nothing about it. And then they end up depressed and miserable in life. And then the idea of being on your deathbed and just sitting there like, shit, I should have done that. I could have done that. What about this person? I should have said that to that person. I wish I would have spent more time with that person. Or I should have took that risk. I should have quit that job 5 years earlier than I did. So I challenge young people to just truly identify what you love. What are you good at? Find ways to monetize on it. And don't sit still with good ideas. Take freaking action and take action today.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more with everything you 100%. Just said. Man. So, well, we always end
we end the podcast with the surprise question at the end. We call it the tombstone game.
Give it to me.
Here lies Adam. What does it say on your tombstone?
That's a wonderful question. I actually
take a second
that.
To think.
No,
about
no, 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 no. What does it say on my tombstone? A man that lived life to his fullest and didn't leave a stone unturned. Period.
Perfect.
Perfect. It's awesome.
All right, guys. Well, it was an awesome episode. If you haven't subscribed yet, please hit that subscribe button. That helps us a ton. Comment what you thought down below. Hit that like button, and we will see you next time.